Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Good morning. How are you on this rainy, soggy, wet, muddy Saturday morning in Kansas City and across the Midwest? You just get the clouds cleared out for 10 minutes and then the rain comes back. It caused a delay at the KC Golf Classic this morning out of Blue Hills Country Club, but they are now playing. I was just checking the updated scoreboard, so they are underway at Blue Hills. If you have tickets to go out there, if you want to check it out, please do. I was out there yesterday, and the quality of play is amazing. I mean, if you have any ideas in your head, like, oh, this isn't the PGA Tour, I'm not going to go out and see these guys, they can't be that good. Look, I talked about this with Kevin Kietzman yesterday. The difference between the bottom 10 players on the PGA Tour and the top 25 players on the Web.com Tour is infinitesimal. It's tiny. It's a sliver of light, barely. These guys are so good. So good. And thankfully, one of the Kansas City kids that we're rooting for made the cut after yesterday's second round. And I was just scrolling down to see where our local kid is right now. Where'd he go? Oh, he must be improving because he's climbing up the board. Oh, where'd he go? Joseph Winslow, now tied for 45th, starting out his day. He's plus one right now, but Joseph Winslow, three-time state champion from St. Thomas Aquinas, is out on the course. And top 45, that's on your hometown course. That's not bad. That's not where you want to be if you want to get to the PGA Tour. But it's not a bad place to be for right now. So we'll keep an eye on that. KC Golf Classic is underway. Got a lot of things to get to today. Let's set up the show for you. Coming up at 9:30 here in just a few minutes, our good friend David Leske from Baseball Prospectus will join us, talk a little Royals baseball and the power display they put on last night against Jake Arrieta and the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll get into that. We're probably going to lead with that today, too. But at 9:30, definitely David Leske will drill down into some stuff. Get into the weeds a little bit. At 10 o'clock, our friend Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, is going to join us. And Nick and I worked for many years together at a different television outlet, and he knows all things Chiefs. He and Todd Palmer have a great podcast over at Channel 41 called Fourth and One. So Nick is going to join us at 10 o'clock. And then at 11 o'clock, our friend Andy Edwards, another person I used to work with in my television days, going to join us. He covers Sporting KC and all of soccer for The Athletic. So we'll talk Sporting KC, who actually plays tomorrow in the nation's capital. They're taking on DC United. We'll also talk English Premier League, which has its final day of the regular season tomorrow. And one thing they have always done, they play all the games at the exact same time. So you can't scoreboard watch. It's one of the most exciting things in soccer. It's one of the final exciting days, final days of the season in all of soccer. So Andy Edwards at 11 o'clock. We'll also talk a little Rockets and Warriors. We'll hit on NASCAR briefly, the truck race last night out at Kansas Speedway, and they've got, of course, the big race tonight at 6:30, which I'm excited about because our guy, Clint Boyer, the Emporia, Kansas native, who is adopted, he's a Kansas City guy, claim that. He claims it, too. He's raced here many times, even back when he was a kid, out at I-70 Speedway in Lakeside. So he's going to start third tonight at Kansas Speedway under the lights. So we'll get into that a little bit. And I was debating whether or not to start with Rockets Warriors or Royals Phillies. And this is where I kind of land. Since we're going to have David Leske on at 9:30 to talk Royals, I want to give some space between our chat about the Royals to lead off here and with David Leske. So I'm going to start with the Royals. What a game last night. I mean, if you didn't watch it and you just saw a 5-1 final score, you might think, oh, okay. You know, your average baseball game. Folks, this was entertaining start to finish. The Royals put on a power show. Homer Bailey had another good start as he continues to rebound from kind of the rough start he had at the beginning of the season. So I could lead off with Alex Gordon, who had two home runs in the game. His second home run was the 1,500th of his career. The home run was caught by a reporter from Fox 4 News in Kansas City who was wearing a Phillies hat, got called out by Toby Cook, who was running the auction last night. I don't know if he got the ball to Alex Gordon or not. Now, you know, we had the thing with Albert Pujols the other night in Detroit where he got his 2,000th RBI And the fan didn't give the ball back. Didn't want it. Didn't want any money. Didn't want any signed jerseys. Didn't want any bats. Didn't want any gifts. Just wanted to take the ball home. And then Albert Pujols said after the game, "Yeah, we don't play this game to pay the fans," which I thought was kind of tone deaf. But Albert Pujols is a chippy guy at times. So I don't know if Alex Gordon got the baseball back. Maybe if somebody from the Royals is listening and you want to call in and let us know if that ball was given to Alex Gordon or if they just let the fan keep it, if it was authenticated, whatever. So I could go with Alex Gordon and his two home runs. I could go with Jorge Soler, who hit another absolute monster bomb into the fountains last night. And it was a no-doubter. I mean, it's in baseball, there used to be a term the players used called see it, center it, smoke it. Absolutely smoked it. Ball left up in the zone. Soler turned on it, and Ryan Lefever had no doubt. Because many times on television when you're calling the game, especially when you're in the press box up high, you kind of wait and you watch where the outfielder goes. You don't watch the ball. The outfielder will tell you where the ball is going. So you watch the outfielder, in this case the center fielder. But Ryan Lefever had absolutely no doubt, and neither did anybody in that ballpark. Not one person in that ballpark didn't know that that ball was going to end up deep. And it went into the fountain. So that's another topic. But here was the moment of the night for me. As much as the Royals' bullpen sucked to begin this season, it's come around. It's gotten better. I see the baseball guys on Twitter that I follow. David Leske, Clint Scholes, Royals Review, all those guys. If I'm leaving somebody out, I apologize. Michael Augustine. I see you guys writing about the bullpen kind of coming back into shape. Here's the moment of the night last night. So it's the sixth inning. It's still kind of a tight ball game. The Royals have a 2-1 lead, right? So Homer Bailey, who had pitched pretty good getting into the sixth, started to wobble. Put some runners on base. Put two runners on. First and second. It's a one-run lead. This is what Ned Yost and other managers always refer to as a high-leverage situation. Nobody out. What are you going to do? Who are you going to bring in? Who do you trust? Does Ned Yost have somebody he trusts at this point? He obviously trusts Scott Barlow. Scott Barlow comes in, gets a strikeout right out of the chute. Okay? So now, two on still with one out. Then Scott Barlow issues a walk. Bases loaded with one out. One-run lead. Do you still trust him? Do you leave him in? Do you go get him? Do you panic? Do you just have the confidence to stick with it and say, sink or swim? So this was going to be on Scott Barlow, regardless of the outcome. Regardless of the outcome, this was Scott Barlow with the game in his hands, with Homer Bailey's runners on base, plus one of his own. Comes back with back-to-back strikeouts, pumps his fist, he screams, let's go. It's awesome. It's a great moment. I know that it wasn't an action play, okay? It wasn't a home run. Wasn't a double. Wasn't a triple. Wasn't driving in a couple of runs. But it was three huge strikeouts, and two with the bases loaded. And this guy showed some cojones. All right? And if you watch the replays, you know, after a strikeout, sometimes Fox Sports will do the pitch sequence and show you where every ball was thrown in relationship to the strike zone. And you see how the batter reacted to it. Scott Barlow was throwing stuff up in the zone. He was throwing benders down at the corners and even below the zone. He was throwing stuff at 93. He was throwing stuff at 76. It was all over the place, and it was spectacular. Okay, so Scott Barlow gets out of that. Bases loaded jam. Three strikeouts. He's done his job to that point. So Ned Yost had talked earlier in the week about wanting his relievers to go a little bit longer. Maybe go two innings at a time. So here comes Scott Barlow again. You know he's just pumped full of adrenaline. Probably on a pitcher's high that just it's as big as you can get. Got the big strikeouts. Left the bases loaded against a Phillies team that's in first place in the National League East. All kinds of superstars all over the place. Comes out for the next inning, the seventh. Strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Just dominating stuff. Dominating stuff. So he does it in the high leverage situation. He backs it up by doing it to start the inning with nobody on. And as Fox Sports noted on the broadcast, Scott Barlow became the first Royals pitcher in club history to get six strikeouts in two or fewer innings, which I was shocked by. I figured somebody would have done that at some point. You know, Kevin Apier, Paul Spildorf, Steve Busby, Brett Saberhagen, Zach Greinke. But no, this was the first. Scott Barlow made club history last night. And it was awesome. Stadium was rocking. I got to check the attendance. I didn't see the attendance from last night, but it hasn't been great. But the fans who were there, they was rocking. I knew some people at the game texted me how awesome it was. Barlow was pumped up. And that's about as big a celebration as you get from a pitcher. So Scott Barlow does his job, six strikeouts in two innings. Jake Diekman comes in, who's been pitching better. He got two strikeouts. Ian Kennedy came in to close, even though technically it wasn't a save situation. No, not technically, literally. It was not a save situation. It was a 5-1 lead. He comes in and throws a perfect ninth inning. So those relievers for the Royals, Barlow, Diekman, Kennedy, four hitless innings, eight strikeouts, fantastic, very entertaining game. All right, back to Alex Gordon. Two home runs last night. Both of them were, I don't know if you call them no doubters, but you were pretty sure when it left the bat it was going to get out, especially the second one. Pulled it, got a hold of it. Second one was for career hit number 1,500. That speaks for his longevity. That speaks for his work ethic. It also speaks in part of the turnaround he's had this year. Home run numbers, his RBI numbers are all way ahead of last year in his age 35 season. And he talked about it after the game. And one of the things he mentioned was Ned Yost giving him 2 days off because they had the day off in the middle and gave him a day off the day before. So he had 2 days off, and he said he felt refreshed, felt rejuvenated. So let's hear from Alex Gordon after the game last night, talking about his two home runs and getting to career hit number 1,500. Now I'll give you a second, Connell. Hang on.
You know, you got your 1,500th hit tonight. You're slugging .545. What is working after a couple of years struggling offensively? Why are you so good this year?
Well, 15, I had a couple injuries. 16, I was hurt, and I just kind of got in a little funk. And, Dale Swain was our hitting coach back then. He kept showing me video of 2011, 2012 of me standing straight up. And he wanted me to get back to it. I just couldn't do it. And finally last year I started, standing straight up, getting my posture back, and just seeing the ball better, using my hands a lot better. So it's starting to work. It took me a little while, but I'm feeling better now.
Two things in one. First of all, congratulations on a great start of the season. But I noticed the other day I was watching you hit, and I noticed that you had a very short bat. It looks to me like it's smaller than the one you normally use. And at the same time, it looks to me like you're stronger this year than you were last year.
It is a shorter bat. I went on a DL stint last year, and Salvador Perez was with me, and I used his bat, which was a 33 3/4, which is smaller, and the weight's evened out a little bit better. So I got to give credit to Salvi for letting me use his bat. It's actually a Troy Tulowitzki model, so.
Alex, I tell you what, it's Harold here. I got to give Pedro credit, man. He was sitting there eyeballing that, saying he had a smaller bat. I'm like, what? Good job, Pedro.
That's what pitchers do to survive, you know?
I've been choking up sometimes, too, so.
That's pretty good stuff. No, I tell you what, being healthy and just watching you play. So I've been watching the Royals. They're fun to watch. You guys are fun to watch. And it may not translate into wins right now, but how do you feel about this organization? You're the face of the franchise. You're going to be there for a little bit longer, maybe finish your career there, hopefully so. What do you feel like where you're at right now with this club?
You know, our team has a lot of good pieces. And, they always talk about rebuild and stuff like that. But, we're here to win now. We've had some unlucky games this year just where we're winning the games and we just kind of fall apart late. And you know, we just got to put it all together, and we're starting to do that. Our bullpen's pitching a lot better. Our starters, 1 through 5, I like. And up and down our lineup, we're putting together good at-bats. People are starting to swing it, so it's still early. So we're still trying to win, and hopefully we can just take it one game at a time and put something together.
Most important question of the night for you. How will Scott Frost and the boys do it in Nebraska?
Basketball, football, man, we got it all. Don't forget Darren Erstad over there for baseball. So it's a triple threat there at Nebraska. So we're going to be all right.
All right, that's the Royals' Alex Gordon on MLB Network last night after the Royals' 5-1 win, talking about his two home runs, talking about getting career hit number 1,500, talking about using a shorter bat, borrowed Salvador Perez's bat. I had to give him credit for that, which is interesting because I would not have guessed that from the eyeball test. I'm not that smart. I don't know. So good stuff from the Royals. We'll talk more about that here coming up in a few minutes with David Leske from Baseball Prospectus. Pivot real quick to Warriors Rockets, if you did not see it last night. So going into the game, and Beards McFly, who works here, huge NBA fan, I asked him before the game, you know, Rockets being favored by 7, doesn't that seem like a big number to you? And he said no, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. You have no Kevin Durant. You don't know if Steph Curry is going to be 100% with that dislocated finger on his left hand. You're playing on the road against a Rockets team that's it's win or go home. That's it. So 7 points, I guess, seemed fair. First half, the Rockets got out to a pretty decent lead. Warriors battled back. The shooting of Klay Thompson, phenomenal. 21 points in the first half, while Steph Curry took the 0 for in the first half. 0 for 5. 0. So they battle back with Klay Thompson and Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston's one of my favorite comeback stories of all time. And all these guys are getting contributions from so many different people. And Houston doesn't know what to do with it. They battle back and go into halftime tied 57-57. So in my opinion, it's wide open from there. Come out in the second half, Rockets start building up a lead again. Lead by 6. Lead by 7. Steph Curry starts to hit a couple of shots. He scored 10 points in the third quarter. They go into the fourth quarter with the Rockets leading by 5. And Steph Curry goes off. Just off the rails. 27 fourth quarter points. 33 second half points. And the Rockets couldn't stop it. And if you watch some of the breakdowns last night, I was watching the ESPN postgame coverage and some of the SportsCenter shows and the Scott Van Pelt show. They would highlight like 4 Warriors players, like put the little circles where they are on the floor in a stop action, and then they'd hit play, and the ball moves so fast. Ding, 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 ding. It was like watching a pinball game. And then it hits somebody, and the ball is out in a half a second. Absolutely beautiful basketball by the Warriors. And then, of course, Steph Curry makes all his free throws down the stretch. His free throws in fourth quarters and overtimes in playoff games are just unreal. Hit all his free throws. Warriors win 118-113. And for the fourth time in the last 5 years, the Warriors knock the Rockets out. And in back-to-back years, they do it in the conference finals on the Rockets' home, or not the conference finals, the game to get to the conference finals on their home floor. I don't know what the Rockets are going to do. They don't have an answer for the Warriors. They just don't. And I hear all the, you know, I've heard all this talk for, what, going on 2-3 years now? Oh, the Warriors are just too good. They have all the good players. It's not fair. I looked it up last night. Steph Curry was the number 7 overall pick. 5 other teams passed on him because Minnesota had the 2 picks right ahead of the Warriors. They could have had Steph Curry. They picked Ricky Rubio. And then they didn't have him for what, a year or two? Because he went back to Spain? Klay Thompson was the number 11 overall pick. There were 10 chances to get him. Draymond Green was the number 35 overall pick. That's 34 chances to go get him. Now look, it's a gamble sometimes in the draft. You can't guarantee you're going to get superstar picks from all these guys. It's also a matter of fit. They went out and got Kevin Durant. They went out and got Andre Iguodala, who had played for 5 or 6 different teams. They went out and got Sean Livingston, who had his leg basically destroyed and was playing in a minor league for a while, took a chance on him to be a role player. They went and did it. Now the Rockets picked up some good pieces. Chris Paul, great signing. Trade for James Harden, awesome. but they just don't fit together the same way the Warriors do. So don't give me this crap about the Warriors have, it's too much talent, it's not fair. Other teams are free to go out and sign players or draft players. Do the homework and get the guys that are going to fit. And yes, you're going to have to hit some home runs once in a while. Or I guess in basketball parlance, you're going to have to hit some half-court shots. Did anybody predict Draymond Green was going to be a star in the NBA coming out of Michigan State? I didn't. Obviously, going at 35 overall, a lot of NBA teams didn't. But he fits what they do. He just fits what they do. And if you look at the contributions they got last night, Steph Curry's 33 points in the second half, awesome. Klay Thompson, 27 total points, awesome. Who else? Iguodala, 17 points. He went 5 of 8 from downtown. And Chris Paul, who I thought was phenomenal last night for the Rockets, his 27 points, he got on the podium last night and started talking about it. He goes, Klay Thompson got loose, started spinning shots. He said, we let Steph Curry get some buck naked layups. That was his quote. And he said, what did Andre do? What did Iguodala do? 5 3-pointers, 5 of 8. He said, we always say, make the other team beat you. And they damn sure did that. That's Chris Paul's words. Those are Chris Paul's words. So if the other team's complaining about all this talent locked into one team in one spot and it's not fair, you can go do it. You can go do it. It can be done. 76ers spent how many years tanking to get the number one overall pick or getting to the top three picks or the top five picks? How many years did they spend doing it? They have a chance this year. They'll have to hold up against, maybe the best player in the NBA in Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks. You can make a case for Giannis or Kevin Durant, either one. I don't care. Pick one. I'm not going to argue with you. Different reasons for either one. 76ers have tried it. Haven't caught up yet. What are the Knicks doing? The Knicks have terrible ownership and a bad front office. What are the Lakers doing? Now, we went and signed LeBron. What the hell else did you do? Not enough. Fired your coach. And you whiffed on the last two coaches you tried to hire, including Tyronn Lue from Kansas City, Raytown High School. They tried to slow roll him. He wanted a 5-year deal. They said, no, we'll give you 3. Because that's when LeBron's contract runs out. Tyronn Lue said, take a leap. Take a flying leap. I've won a championship in this league. I was a good player. I was a good coach. I deserve a little more respect than that, especially from an organization I used to play for. And allegedly Kurt Rambis and his wife are running this show. They're telling Jenny Buss what to do with this coaching search. The hell's going on with that? I like Kurt Rambis when I was a kid because there were a couple of years I had to play with glasses, and Kurt Rambis played with glasses. What he's doing right now with that organization, man, LeBron, if you got a chance to get out, get out, because it ain't getting better. So the Knicks are bad. Lakers are bad. Rockets can't get over the hump. The Heat haven't been the same since they've lost their big three. Well, two of the three big three. You can do it. You just have to have the discipline to do it. You have to have the smarts to do it. You have to have the dedication to do it. You have to have the right front office, the right head coach, and make the pieces fit. So there's my rant. If you couldn't tell, I'm a little bit of a Warriors fan. Probably, I don't know, call me a front runner. I don't care. But they did it the right way for them. I'm not saying other teams can copy it, but I'm saying you can make it work. You can draft the right players to fit the system you want to play with your head coach, your GM, and you better have some ownership that'll back you up. You want to go play for the Knicks? Kevin Durant? James Dolan is a nut job. Good luck with that. All right, on that note, deep breath. We'll collect ourselves a little bit here, and then we'll get back into Royals baseball. Very entertaining 5-1 win last night with Alex Gordon, 2 home runs. Jorge Soler, big home run. Homer Bailey pitching well again. Scott Barlow nails out of the bullpen. The whole bullpen was awesome last night. We'll do that with David Leske from Baseball Prospectus. He's going to join us next. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Connell McCourt is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That is about the most perfect Saturday vibe I can think of. Oh, yeah. I told Connell McCourt, we've worked together a couple of times, but it's been a while. And you asked me what kind of music, and I said, I only have one requirement. At least once during the show, we got to play Beastie Boys. So you check that off. If you want to run more, you can, but definitely.
I'm good, yeah. Yeah, I'll play them all day.
All right, good stuff there. Welcome back to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's rainy. It's soggy. It's a little bit chilly outside. My name is Brad Porter. Connell McCourt is running the show today. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we'll talk Chiefs football with Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News. At 11 o'clock, we'll talk Sporting KC. We'll talk English Premier League. We'll talk Champions League with Andy Edwards from The Athletic, who covers all things soccer. By the way, for the weather report, I just checked Jeff Penner, 41 Action News, and he said one more round of showers today before it stays dry. The rain will be over sometime between noon and 1 o'clock. So there's your update from Jeff Penner, 41 Action News. Sometimes it just feels like it's just not going to stop. By the way, thanks to Connell for brewing up a hot pot of coffee this morning. Kind of hit the spot, get the wheels rolling, so to speak. Let's get rolling right now and talk some Royals baseball with our friend David Leske from Baseball Prospectus. David, how are you on this otherwise rainy Saturday morning in Kansas City?
I'm doing great. You know, I came back from Florida yesterday and it came back to this, so what could be bad, right?
Well, where in Florida?
I was in Tampa and then Orlando.
Okay.
But so it was nice weather.
Orlando, usually, I used to go down to Royal Spring Training down there in Baseball City, which is right outside of Orlando. I used to get a rain shower every morning right around 10, 10:30 for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then it would clear out for
another
the day.
One about 3:30, it seems like.
Right. Talking Royals baseball with David Leske here. 5-1 win for the Royals over the NL East leading Philadelphia Phillies last night. And, David, I was talking about this in the open of the show. This game, to me, was thrilling. I mean, you had the three home runs. You had Alex Gordon get his 1,500 career hit. The bullpen was smoking. Scott Barlow, high leverage, was awesome. Homer Bailey seems to be getting back on track over his last few starts. And I thought the game was entertaining start to finish last night.
Yeah, it was a great game. You know, Bailey kind of sputtered in that sixth inning.
Yep.
But Scott Barlow, who I don't think we're talking about enough, is just nailed. How many times in the last two or three weeks has he come in a situation that's just unwinnable and won the situation? He's been incredible. Six strikeouts over two innings. Come on.
It's never been done in a Royals uniform.
Yeah. The guy is dynamite. He's up to 96 with his fastball. I mean, you want to talk about maybe the next great reliever. Maybe he's the current great reliever for the Royals right now. But I think that's a guy you can count on. And I really liked that signing last year when they got him on that split deal from the Dodgers. I liked his stuff, but he's taken a step forward this year and just been really, really good. I don't trust anybody out of the bullpen more than I trust Scott Barlow at this point. And that includes Ian Kennedy, who's also been really, really good.
Right.
They've got the makings of something solid back there. But, yeah, really good game last night. Just clean. They got themselves in a little trouble. Five blocks, you don't want to see that. But they worked around them. And the bullpen, four shutout innings with eight strikeouts. How can you complain? Did they give up a hit? I don't think they did.
No, they did not give up a hit in those four innings of relief. None.
The bullpen's been a lot better lately, and it's coincided with Brad Boxberger getting shifted to lower leverage, and he's excelled in lower leverage, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they got to get Willie Peralta out of some high leverage spots, and I think they're headed that way. And I think the bullpen's improving. It's nice because it allows you to have a clean game like last night. You know, that 5-1, it was almost in doubt in some ways, but also not really in doubt in any ways, even though it was a tight game. Just really fun to watch.
We're speaking with David Leske from Baseball Prospectus. Going back to Scott Barlow, this is the one thing I noticed during the broadcast last night, and I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but when they show after a strikeout, sometimes Fox will show the pitch by pitch and where each pitch landed in relationship to the strike zone, the speed on it, and then you see whether or not the hitter swung and missed or not. And Barlow is working upstairs, even outside the zone. He's working downstairs outside the zone. He's hitting 96. He's dropping down to 78, 79, and a lot of his stuff is outside the zone, and he's getting swings and misses. And Clint Scholes tweeted out this morning the swing and miss rate, which is awesome. And Angels hitters had no idea, or Angels, Phillies hitters had no idea what to do with him. Throw in the fact that you could question the strike zone a little bit, but the Phillies were clearly frustrated and off the mark on what they were seeing from Scott Barlow.
Let me make a quick note. You said Angels. I could not stop thinking they were playing the Angels last night. I don't know why.
It's the uniform. That red sometimes.
I guess. It's just, every time I looked up, I'm going, oh, it's Phillies, Angels, so whatever, whoever they are. maybe it's because we all thought Mike Trout would be a Philly eventually, and so you equate the Angels with the Phillies. But yeah, Barlow, the thing that he does really well is, the biggest thing, he has phenomenal movement on his breaking pitches. He can start them dead center. And if you ever look on some of the tunneling metrics, you can see it on Baseball Savant, Baseball Perspectives. All these sites have tunneling now. The fastball and the slider and the curve all pretty much are in the same spot until a certain point. And if you're a hitter, what do? Because you don't know what the pitch is unless you pick it up real early and know to not swing. And He's just been great. And, you know, because he does work out of the zone, he's going to be prone to some walks here and there. But it's really impressive to watch him pitch. I think he's got an idea. I think he's taken a big step forward this season, which is kind of the only guy you can say that about on this pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe one of the only guys. So that's commendable. He's fun to watch. And like I said, I trust him more than any pitcher out of that bullpen right now.
What I also liked, and this has nothing to do with how he pitches, after each strikeout to end the innings in the sixth and seventh, big fist pump, screaming at the dugout, and it reminded me a little bit of Kelvin Herrera, because in the HDH era, you know, Wade Davis was the robot, never showed any emotion. Greg Holland was pretty, he could be excitable once in a while, but he was pretty down to earth. But Herrera could get amped up a little bit.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of that. And I like to see, you know, you don't have to be off the charts enthusiastic to if you're a great ball player, a good ball player, but I just like to see it after those big situations.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun to see them get excited about that. I think it fires at the dugout. I think it makes sense. And I love the way Yost is using him, because there is a temptation when somebody's pitching that well and somebody's striking out guys like that and just making hitters look silly. There is a temptation to say, okay, you're my ninth inning guy. But I love that he's using him in situations that aren't the ninth inning, because Scott Barlow is not the ninth inning guy. He's the high leverage guy. And I think back to 2012 when the Royals signed Jonathan Broxton after Soria went down.
Yep.
And I was so glad they did, not because I really wanted Jonathan Broxton, but because it allowed them to keep Greg Holland in that high leverage role instead of in the pigeonholed closer's role, which when you've got a bullpen of four or five studs, you can do that and be fine. But when you don't, you got to use your best relievers when you need your best relievers. You can't save them for when you have a two-run lead the ninth inning. And, you know, Scott Barlow is, like I said, they're part of their best reliever right now, and they're not saving him. They're using him in situations. It was the sixth inning yesterday. And so I have to give Yost credit for seeing that and not saying, okay, you're my closer now, because they need him in the non-closer role because
right. He's
more important.
Well, that's kind of the evolution of the game, too. We've seen it in the last few years of the playoffs where sometimes Aroldis Chapman would come in the sixth or seventh inning in a high leverage, or Cleveland would do it with
They switch Andrew Miller and Cody.
Andrew
Allen
Miller.
Back and forth.
They would just switch him in and out, and we've seen more teams do that. More teams embrace it, and I think it's a perfect model for the Royals. Who, let's face it, they're not going to be in the playoffs this year, but they can try to win some games this way and build up some confidence. I'll ask you about one more pitcher. I think Jake Diekman gets overlooked a little bit, but Homer Bailey. You know, he started off the season rough, and I saw the numbers this morning. In his first 10 innings of the season, he gave up 10 runs. And that was clearly trending in the wrong direction. But, you know, he hasn't been healthy the last couple of years. You hope he can kind of bounce back a little bit. So the update from that is, after giving up 10 runs in the first 10 innings, now he's given up just 12 in 31 innings. And when they signed Homer Bailey, I've always been a Homer Bailey fan, not a huge fan. I'm not going to go out and buy a jersey or anything, but I always thought he was a nice player. And my idea going in is, it's a low-risk signing. You're not spending a ton of money, and if you get something decent rolling in those first couple of months, you might have a nice trade piece come June and July.
Yeah, no, for sure. And he's been surprisingly good, because he didn't look good in spring training. He looked good in his last spring training outing, and that's probably what locked up his roster spot over Heath Stelmeyer, who looked horrible in spring training. But, yeah, he's he's done well. And I thought it was, you know, he pitched really well for a couple starts. He had that nice game against Cleveland, and there's a little, I can't remember who he's faced, but he got a couple wins. He looked good. And then he struggled against the Rays and didn't make it out of the second inning. And you thought, okay, that's it. And then he came back and he gave up, what, four in the first two innings against the Angels, I think. But then he settled down.
Right.
And he's been pretty good since then. And I think that's what you're going to get from Bailey. There's going to be games where you need eight innings from your bullpen from him. It's just going to happen in all likelihood. I'd be happy with what they've gotten from him. And I think, you know, Bailey leads to an interesting question, too. And you look down to AAA and what they're doing down there. How many Royals would benefit from an opener? And I think it's pretty much the entire rotation.
Yeah. Well, Kyle Zimmer's been doing it.
Kyle Zimmer's been doing it. Josh Stoneman's been doing it down there. You don't do something in AAA that is that against the typical thing that you do if you're not thinking about implementing it in the majors. And I would not be surprised if at some point this year the Royals use an opener, you know, two or three times in a rotation turn, because Bailey, look, last night he hit a wall in the sixth inning, and he's hit walls in the middle of games before too. Like even in that second start when he gave up, I think, seven runs in five innings, it was the fifth inning or the sixth inning that hurt him. He gave up a couple home runs against the Mariners. I remember that. And he was, you know, he had five innings and three runs going into that, and he gave up four and couldn't get an out or something like that. And so you start to wonder, okay, is this how they're going to get the most out of their staff? And I think with their starting rotation, I think Brad Keller, Jacob Junis, Danny Duffy, and Homer Bailey, I think they can all benefit from an opener. Jorge Lopez, I think, could too, but I think he's a reliever.
Yes, I do too.
I've been saying that since the trade last year. And I'm totally fine with them giving him starts because that's what this season should be about. But those four guys, you put an opener in front of a couple of them, I think you're looking at, you could have the type of renaissance on a pitching staff that we've seen from the Rays. Not that they're the same talent level, but I really think it can be a huge benefit to this staff. And I think based on what they're doing in Omaha, we're getting close to that. And so maybe we haven't even invested in Homer Bailey or Keller or Junis or Duffy. Maybe we'll see the best out of them once the strategy shifts to actually help them even a little bit more.
I'm all for it. This team could try anything it wants, and I'd be all for it just to find something.
There's no reason not to.
No, there's not. Not at all. We're speaking with David Leske from Baseball Perspectives, talking Royals baseball after the 5-1 win over the Phillies last night at Kauffman Stadium. All right, a couple of big accomplishments at the plate last night. Jorge Soler gets his 10th home run of the season on a bomb maybe even before the ball made contact with the bat, we all knew it was going out. It got hung up in the zone, and it was one of those see it, center it, smoke it type of moments, and it was into the, not just into the fountains, but like the center field part of the fountains, which was unbelievable.
And it was a laser, too.
Yeah! And so he has 10 home runs. His career high in a season is 12, so he's going to pass that if he stays healthy. Alex Gordon goes yard twice, including the second one, which was his 1,500th career hit. And this is all part of the rebirth of Alex Gordon, if you will. I think I want to give credit where credit's due. I believe Rustin Dodd from The Athletic tweeted out last night, it's part of the Gordonizance, I think was the term he used. And he was on MLB Network last night, and Pedro Martinez, and we ran this earlier in the show, Pedro Martinez asked him, are you using a shorter bat? I never would have guessed that by an eyeball test. I never would have thought to do something.
Either.
And so he said, yeah, I've gone down to a 33 and a third, which means nothing to me because I don't play anymore. I know what I used to use, a 33, 32 aluminum, and I couldn't hit for crap. But so he borrowed one from Salvador Perez. It's a little bit shorter. He said the weight is better balanced. Sometimes he's even choking up a little bit. And it's just all part of this project that's come together at his age 35 season after two what I would call horrific seasons by Alex Gordon standards, and it's just so much darn fun to watch.
It is, it is. And, you know, I think coming into the season, we all assume this is it for Gordon. This is his last year. He's going to give the Royals what he can give him, and then he's going to hang it up and be in the front office forever, and that's that. You don't know now. I mean, if he's hitting, what, 290-something with a 380 on base, 500 slugging percentage, he's got his 1,500th hit. I mean, look, he can help a contender. I don't know that he'd want to go to it. I don't know that he cares to leave the Royals at this point in his career. I mean, he's won a World Series. He's won tons of gold gloves. I think, did he have a silver slugger? I can't remember if he won one of those in his better offensive years. But either way, I mean, he's pretty much done everything you can do in baseball outside of winning an MVP, which is probably not going to happen at this point in his career. And so does he really care to play somewhere that's far away from home? He's got a home in Kansas City. He's from the Omaha area,
right.
Omaha Lincoln area. Like, why? What is the appeal to him to go play for the Angels or the Phillies or the Yankees or whatever? I mean, yeah, you can win a title, but he's got a title.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess you always, if you have one, you want two. But it's an interesting conundrum that will come up at the end of the year. I mean, they're obviously not going to exercise the $23 million option. That's a given. But, I mean, look, maybe they do 1 year and $8 million. Kind of the Marquez type deal with the Braves. Maybe they do that and then keep him around for another season after this year. So it's been a lot of fun to watch. And look, 1,500 hits doesn't seem that impressive when you think about, oh, 3,000 hits, 2,500, all that. But look, not a lot of guys have gotten this to 1,500. I think it's fewer than 700 in baseball history, and that's a lot of people have played to get to that point. And he's one of the few who has gotten to 1,500 hits. It's an accomplishment, and he's dealt with a lot of issues throughout his career. You know, sent down in 2009, moved to the outfield in 2010, injuries, bad performance the last couple of seasons, like you mentioned, and he's carved out a really nice career. It's not a Baseball Hall of Fame career, but it's a Royals Hall of Fame career. It's so great to see him doing this right now, because there's nobody. I don't root for anybody more than I root for Alex Cora, just because he's such a good guy and he's been such a integral part of this team for so long that you just want him to do well, and I'm glad that he is.
Absolutely. Hey, David, I appreciate you joining us on this rainy Saturday morning to talk a little baseball. If you want more baseball, tune in tonight at 5 o'clock for Baseball Tonight with Sean Collins here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. David, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You do the same. Thanks, Brad.
All right, that's David Leske from Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at DB Leske, LESKY. Royals will be back at it tonight at Kauffman Stadium, 6:15 first pitch. Brad Keller against Zach Eflin. Quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Colin McCord is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, you got to kick it. It's almost 10 o'clock. Got to get up. Got to get moving. Got to get the... Got to get ready to go. Take on the day. Bring an umbrella. Take a raincoat wherever you're going. Jeff Penner says it'll stop sometime between noon and 1. We got one more wave coming through, though. Just a couple of minutes left in hour number 1, and then we'll charge into hour number 2 and talk Chiefs football with our good friend Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News. So it's Mother's Day weekend. Tomorrow is Mother's Day. Hopefully you have plans. And I always ask this carefully, Connell, because sometimes people ask me, are you going to go see your mom? And I'll have to say, we lost our mom like 22 years ago, and people feel bad. And I'm like, look, it was a long time ago. I'm happy. I'm thinking about her all the time. So is your mother still with us?
She is, yeah.
Okay, so how are you going to celebrate, since she's probably, what, 8,000 miles away?
Well, the thing
in
is,
Ireland?
It's a different day in Ireland. It's at the end of March, Mother's Day.
Oh,
in Ireland,
yeah. Okay. So
we did
Mother's
the 22nd
day.
Of March, so me and my two brothers usually just... We, like, pull money together and, like, send my parents away to a spa or something.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
But that's only really what I can do from here.
Right.
You know, as you said, a couple of thousand miles away, so, you know. But if anybody is out there, I would definitely tell them, if your mother is still with us, make sure you give her a wonderful Mother's Day.
Absolutely.
Because we don't all have that luxury, you know.
Yep, absolutely. And by the way, Sam Mellinger, the Kansas City Star, reposted his story today on Twitter. You can follow him at Mellinger. Mellinger. He wrote a column probably 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, just an outstanding piece on his mom, because he lost his mom, but said she's still with us. And he posts it every weekend when it's going to, you know, we're getting close to Mother's Day. And it's just, I read it every time, and it's just fantastic. Sam just does an awesome job with that stuff. So hopefully you get out and celebrate. If your mom's not here, find a friend and celebrate their mom, and celebrate your mom, because your mom is always going to be with you anyway. I kind of stumbled to the finish line on that one. We have 2 more hours to go here on Sports Saturday. Coming up again in the 10 o'clock hour, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, talking Chiefs football. Made a couple of roster moves over the last couple of days. Nothing big. They brought in another tight end. I was hoping they might bring in somebody else. But just making some a couple of minor moves, and who knows if these guys are going to stick to the roster. So we'll speak with Nick Jacobs about that coming up in about 4 or 5 minutes. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Andy Edwards from The Athletic will be talking Sporting KC. We'll be talking the final day of the English Premier League, which comes up tomorrow. And we'll be talking Champions League. All that's still to come. You are listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Connell McCourt is running the show. And you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.